court will proceed to the fifth case of the day, Bilal v. Rotech Industries. Mr. Bilal.
Good morning, Your Honors. Kiris Bilal. I represent the appellant in this matter, Daphne Bilal. This matter is before the court on a Title VII action. Today, I know time is limited. I'd like to discuss 4 points in our brief. The dismissal of the retaliation claim, the denial of the plaintiff's motion to compel Mr. Ori to answer various questions put to him at his deposition, and the denial of the plaintiff's request for leave to file a Second Amendment complaint, and then finally, the granting of summary judgment for the defendants in this case. As to the retaliation claim, the law is clear in that all claims that are like or reasonably like those in the EEOC charge should be allowed. Essentially what has happened here is the plaintiff was boxed out of her claim, and that's precisely what the court says shouldn't happen in this case.
But the district court recognizes that one shouldn't become obsessed with which boxes are checked. But what you can't find, I think, or at least the district court thought you could not find, from the EEOC charge that was filed, the sequence that is required for a retaliation claim, namely, I complained about such and such, and then some retaliatory step was taken vis-a-vis me. You know, I wasn't promoted, or I was terminated, or I was assigned, you know, to sweep the floor every day, or something retaliatory. And when you can't find that, there's a huge notice problem. The other party looking at the complaint might understand that they were being charged with allowing a hostile work environment to exist. They may understand that they're charged with other things, but there's the court finds that in this particular case, it's not really a question of the box, it's a question of notice.
Right, and in this case here, Your Honor, the actual charge on the face of the charge form, it actually states that, one, she's complaining of being sexually touched and harassed by the CEO, Mr.
Ori.
But
that doesn't tell me that's retaliation. That tells me that there's a substantive discrimination charge.
And then the other point is the law requires that we look also into the investigation. And during the investigation, that was certainly said. I mean, the retaliation point was brought up, and the fact that after she made these complaints and rebuffed the charge for sexual relations with Mr. Ori, her world changed at Rotech. Her abilities to go to the restroom were limited, if not eliminated, and other things were done to retaliate against her, including having her arrested for an alleged trespass.
But, again, I don't see where the other party is being alerted to the fact that this separate theory under the employment discrimination laws is one that she's pursuing. That, what you've described, could all be part of a pattern of harassment as well. And the problem is it fits both theories. And where does she say in some way that's a timely way? I mean, there's a whole routine here, as I'm sure you're well aware. I'm just concerned that there's no notice about this. I mean, she certainly has her substantive claim. She's filed an appropriate charge on that. She can go forward, but
right.
Where's the notice?
The law that we cited, Judge, is that we have to look at the investigation as well. And during that point, during the investigation, we talked about those things. We talked about the fact that she complained about the retaliation and things of that nature. They were brought up during the investigation, but the court's opinion never really went into that.
I think that's a broader reading of, I mean, sir, this is, we're not talking about subject matter jurisdiction, obviously, but I think that's a broader reading of these cases than many of our decisions have given that. Anyway, we'll see.
And the other point involving the denial of the motion to compel Mr. Ori to answer various questions put to him in his deposition.
Oh, by the way, did you make the argument in your brief that it's really not the complaint form at all we should look at? It's the full course of the investigation?
I did raise that in the brief, Your Honor. Regarding the motion to compel that was denied, Mr. Ori was asked questions regarding sexual relationships that he had with other female employees of the company, Rotech. He is the CEO of the company. We put evidence out that Ms. Lopez complained of Mr. Ori doing the same thing to her as well, and seeing him do this to other female employees as well. We've asked him these questions in his deposition. He refused to answer them, saying that these were consensual relationships and they dated far back. But that's not the point.
The district court, though, thought some of this information that you wanted to explore was very stale and was trying to put reasonable limits on discovery. Did you ever ask for answers, let's say, just going back 5 or 8 or some rational number of years?
We did go back to some of the incidents involving Ms. Lopez, for example. But under Rule 26, the plaintiff has a right to not only discover relevant evidence, but also things that could lead to discovery.
Well, sure, and district courts have a right to put reasonable restrictions on discovery, and we normally look at that for abuse of discretion.
Right. I thought in this case, Your Honor, that there was no prejudice. If Mr. Ori said that there were no incidents that occurred involving sex with his former employees, then that would be fine. But, I mean, this is right on point. The issue in this case is whether or not he sexually harassed and later retaliated and discriminated against the plaintiff in this case. If there are instances where this has happened in the past, we have a right to know that. For example, Your Honor, he could have divulged in his deposition that someone named Sarah Thomas he had a relationship with. We could have called Sarah Thomas, and she could have said that, yes, this happened to me, and he told me the same thing, and I heard that he was doing this with a lot of other employees. That could have helped the case as well.
But you wanted to go back all 38 years. At least the district court seemed to think so.
No, that wasn't what we were trying to do. We were just asking about specific instances where this had happened. I think he limited it to like 5 years or 10 years or something of that nature. But I think in this particular point, because we're talking about sexual harassment and discrimination, it's particularly important that that type of evidence be allowed to be discovered. We're talking about discovery, which is wide in its scope. And our next point, Your Honor, dealing with the denial of our request for leave to file a Second Amendment complaint. Rule 15 is clear. Unless there's a final judgment and there's some prejudice on the other side, it's liberally granted amendments to pleadings. In this case here, also, if it's denied, the court should at least explain specifically why it's being denied. In this case, the record is silent as to why it was denied. And then second, there is nothing at all in the record showing that the defendants were prejudiced at all. Not even a claim, not one assertion as to how it would have prejudiced the defendants in this case.
I mean, this is a little different from the first case we heard. I'm not sure if you were in the court for that argument. But here I understand the district court to be saying that the Second Amendment complaint isn't really advancing the ball enough beyond the first to make the amendment worth it.
That's not what I gathered from the opinion, Your Honor. I thought the court essentially didn't give a reason. If the order actually states that it's just denied. It doesn't say why it's denied or the basis for the denial. It just says denied. So there is no explanation specifically as to why it was denied. And again, I mean, we're talking about a liberal granting of a motion for leave to file a Second Amendment complaint here. And there's no prejudice at all to the defendant. So if they couldn't even assert that there was some prejudice, I don't think that it was fair to deny the plaintiff the right to file a Second Amendment complaint. And finally, regarding the denial or the granting of summary judgment to the defendants here, Rule 56 is clear. If there is a single genuine issue of material fact for trial, then the matter should not be resolved in a summary judgment.
Well, unless, I mean, I'm not sure that's quite the right way to phrase it. You have to mean that there is also nothing on which you would bear the burden of proof on which you failed. It's really the other way around. If you have to prove 5 things and you can't prove one of them, then you're going to lose your case, even if you've got lots of disputed issues, material fact, on other aspects of the case.
Right.
Because you have the burden of proof.
Right, and that goes to our point here. In our brief, we've actually outlined the prima facie case. And the defendant, in the response brief, didn't even address the points that were raised and the citations to the record showing where the evidence was. Completely ignored that. So I'm not sure if they're waiving that, but there was no argument in the response brief as to these points that were raised on all the points in the prima facie case, which we laid out, which we've laid out and also cited to in the record. So I'm not sure why they didn't respond to it, but it wasn't responded to in the response brief. And then also, Your Honor, if we look at the inferences that could be drawn, they should be drawn in favor of the non-moving party in this case. That's the plaintiff. Clearly, if the CEO engages in sexual harassment, the employer is strictly liable. There is no defense to that. They're strictly liable. The CEO is Robert Ory. He's the one that's engaged in this conduct. Rotec is therefore strictly liable. I reserve the rest of my balance for...
You used your time, but I'll give you some time.
May it please the Court, I'm John Muldoon, and I represent the appellees and the defendants in the court below. Regarding the issue about the retaliation claim, again, there is no link to the complaint of conduct and any type of retaliation. It's not in the complaint. It's not in the record.
What about the investigation? What if anything, should we do with that? That's certainly not part of the complaint.
Well,
I mean, that would be material outside the record.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt. There's nothing in the record about the investigation. There's argument that this was all brought up during the investigation, but there's nothing that I can look at or that you can look at in the record before us to say, well, there in fact that was in fact the case.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the argument, I'm not hearing the link between some type of conduct or some type of complaint and her termination. So I think that their appeal fails on that ground. And then that ties into this argument about amending the complaint the second time. From
why don't we pass that for a second and go to the hostile work environment, the summary judgment. Why don't we speak to that a little bit?
Sure. The district court found five complaint of instances.
Where did the district court find that? I was interested in seeing where in this record, whether it's in the complaint or a motion or something, where are we getting the bases for the hostile work environment claim?
Well, I think it comes from the motion, the response to the motion for summary judgment that...
And was there a Rule 56.1 statement filed?
There was a 56.1 statement, and I think he called, the court called that from there. And so he found that these were isolated instances that, while inappropriate if true, did not rise to the level of altering the conditions of employment. The court cited the Saxon case. The Saxon case had more instances of inappropriate conduct. There was a groping in a jazz club. There was a grabbing and kissing outside that jazz club for 2 or 3 seconds. And at a later time, there was a trip to the Arboretum where the employer lurched out of the bushes.
Jumped out of the bushes, yes, I remember that case. But in your case, we have the invitation to watch the Chicago Marathon. We have Mr. Ury calling her a fox. We have a particularly unpleasant-sounding thing where he takes a piece of chocolate from his mouth and puts it into hers. He tells her job would be easier if she had sex with him, and he tells her he wishes that she'd quit, and so on. Is that it?
That's as far as the district court could find the record, Judge.
I mean, the chocolate is...
It's disgusting.
Physical and...
It's disgusting. It doesn't sound sexual to me, but that's not my job.
not your style, huh?
That's not my thing. But... again, they're isolated, and even if
telling her that her job would be easier? I mean, that's actually pretty direct.
It was a one-time thing. And again, so it would be an isolated instance. But
it's coming from the CEO, though, can't we look at the rest of the evidence about whether, even in minor ways, her job was prejudiced? As she turned him down, as I recall, and so.
Yes, but there's no link that these instances were so pervasive and so severe that it altered the conditions of her employment. What conditions of her employment were altered? You know, she says something about punching a clock or having specified bathroom breaks. That's the case in most places of employment. You have set breaks and you have to keep track of your time. That doesn't really sound to be so severe as to alter your conditions of employment. It seems like a normal condition of employment. So even if these isolated incidences could rise above the bar set in Saxton, that you don't have any link that it altered the conditions of her employment. So I believe that her case fails on that as well. Regarding the discovery issue, again, Ms. Bilal is trying to establish a pattern of conduct. Any pattern of conduct certainly would have taken place in that 10 years. And, in fact, they were allowed to inquire about a prior complaint that happened in 2000, the Lopez. That was certainly within the 10 years. To go back any further than that, it was a fishing expedition, and the judge, in his discretion, limited to 10 years, and they've shown no abuse of discretion. They've showed no actual prejudice to this limiting of the deposition. So again, they're on that issue, they fail. And finally, to get to the amending the complaint a second time, from my understanding of the record, I was not attorney of record at that time, but my reading of the record shows that Ms. Bilal wanted to amend the complaint to add the retaliation, to add more facts, to beef up her retaliation claim. But when the court had already dismissed the retaliation claim, saying that it wasn't properly brought up in the EEOC, there's no reason to amend the complaint to add more facts regarding the retaliation. At best, she may have wanted to file a motion to reconsider adding more facts, but the proper remedy would not be to amend a complaint, adding facts to a count that's already been dismissed. So, again, on that issue, their case fails. And just, it wasn't brought up in argument, but it was brought up in brief, about the insubordination, that she was terminated because of insubordination. The facts, as in summary judgment, set forth, there was a dispute between Ms. Bilal and her supervisor, Ms. Lombardo, that Ms. Lombardo threw a newspaper of some sort at Ms. Bilal. They had a meeting with Mr. Owry, the CEO, and in the course of that meeting, Ms. Bilal was insubordinate to Ms. Lombardo, her supervisor. And as this court has said, and other courts have said, insubordination is a legitimate reason for termination, even if the insubordination is taking place in a protected activity, such as in the Kahn case that we cited, where there's a whistleblower for ComEd. He's making all these claims about unsafe practices there, but while doing so, he's being insubordinate. And that was a proper reason for termination. Ms. Bilal has not shown that insubordination was a lie. In fact, she said it happened. So it did happen. There's an argument about there was no investigation done or no procedures in place for investigation to be done. But the fact of the matter is it was witnessed by the CEO. They were all in a meeting together, and there was insubordination. What kind of procedure, what kind of investigation had been done? He witnessed it and fired her on the spot for that insubordination. So, again, on the four points brought up today and the fifth point that was brought up in the briefs, Ms. Bilal has just not sustained her burden here and has not should not prevail on her appeal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Melton. Yeah, your time expired, but you may have 2 minutes.
Your Honor, counsel states that there was nothing in the record about her condition of employment being altering, but that's simply not true. I mean, there's nothing more altering than having your job terminated.
Well, but on the retaliation claim, this is a serious point. This has to have been a 12B6 motion because the law is quite clear that the EEOC charge requirement's non-jurisdictional. But we can't go outside the complaint and perhaps exhibits attached to the complaint to see what else may have happened. If it's in the EEOC charge, which I think was an exhibit, then it's there. And if it's not, it isn't there. What things outside the record in an investigation are simply not appropriate.
Judge, I understand that. I wanted to kind of get to this point about the newspaper as well, real quick.
Okay, fine. I mean, if you want to talk about the non-discriminatory reason, and I would suppose that relates to the harassment claim. So.
Right. And with that point there, because counsel stated that there was insubordination that day, actually, the record actually reflects that Mr. Ori said that he didn't terminate the plaintiff in this case. That was his testimony. However, Chester Ring stated that she actually didn't terminate the plaintiff. He did. So there's conflicting testimony there. But the affidavit filed by the plaintiff in this case specifically contradicts that whole notion of what happened that day. She says that Ms. Chesterine threw the paper at her that day. She went in to report it to Mr. Ori. And when she did that, Mr. Ori immediately fired her. That's the way the evidence was presented in the record. So that's completely different. And that within itself is a genuine issue material fact. And she never said that she was insubordinate. She said that the paper was thrown at her, and she went in and she reported what happened. And no investigation was taken. That's what the record reflects. And I don't understand what can be more offensive or humiliating to anyone than to have someone's hand placed in their mouth with chocolate, putting that in their mouth, or doing the things that are described in the complaint. I just couldn't imagine anything worse than that, Judge. So I hope that the court will look at this and remand and reverse the district court. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will proceed to the sixth case of the